This recording is a production of Faith Builders Educational Programs. This presentation was recorded at REACH 2015, a conservative Anabaptist ministry convention hosted by Faith Builders on March 19 and 20, 2015.
When I'm looking at this group, I'm looking at a number of people who have, in this group, helped me move mountains. And they can tell you that I'm a terrible person to be doing this session because I have sore, sprained mountains from trying to move them too much by myself. So I'm talking to myself and trying to give a bit of an explanation of what I've learned through the years in moving mountains of ministry. And if you'll excuse me, my computer's giving me fits. Okay, there are two truths in ministry. One is there will be mountains. And number two, there will be help. When Jesus was talking about having faith the size of a mustard seed to move a mountain, he was talking about the comparison of the size of the challenges that we face and what we have to contribute to our challenges. And he said, look, folks, what you need, your mountain is way bigger than you. What you need is something small in the vast eternity of God. So a little bit of faith, huge mountains. Just a few more introductory comments. Back in 2000, well, from a child, I thought I was going to be a missionary. God called me into missionary medicine when I was in high school. Marietta Yoder agreed to partner with me under Amish Mennonite aid, and we moved down to El Salvador together in this little pickup, which was filled to the gills with medical equipment and everything we owned. Wendell, my brother, who many of you know through Oasis, drove us down. And at that point, he was, I think, an 18-year-old, quite unhandy in a very tight pickup cab. I was sitting close to him, and my knees knew that every time he shifted, he'd pinch the back of my knees. But when he wasn't on top of the camper journaling, he was under the pickup fixing the thing, and we got there by the grace of God safely. Lots of adventures. We moved to rural El Salvador, a very rural village, which at that time was accessible over this road. We tried very hard to become as much like our people as we could. I said there were three things I will never do. I have a pointed head. I cannot carry things on my head like the lady in the background does. I have square palms, so I cannot make round tortillas. And I have Kansas feet, and so I cannot go up and down mountain hills without sliding. We moved into this house, which was a rented house. These neighbors are still our closest friends. This is the clinic. At that time, from the very beginning, we knew that I would have challenges trying to minister to the whole people. So I will tell you more about Marietta's ministry in a minute. But back to the truth, two truths in ministry. There will be mountains to be moved, and there will be help in moving them. I want to tell you about Pedro. Pedro is a very current story. This is not Pedro himself nor his house, but it could be his twin brother. Pedro, I first met 10 years ago probably and diagnosed diabetes at that time. And he came perhaps once or twice. And I kind of remembered afterwards that I hadn't seen him for a while. Didn't think of Pedro again until back in December. Martha, who has worked with me from the local village for 22 and a half, called us up after a very tiring clinic day and said, I'm here visiting Pedro, and he's really sick. His foot is red, and he's under a blanket, and the whole blanket is shaking. And so Martha knows my heart and my mind. And so Rhoda was fielding the call, and I said, well, he needs to go to emergency room. He's septic. And Rhoda transferred that information and hung up, and then she looked at me and she said, Martha didn't say much when I told her that. We called Martha back and said, I said to Martha, do you need me to come and see Pedro? And she goes, yes. So I hopped on my four-wheeler and rode out to where Pedro was, and Pedro, like poor folks, he was just stuck on the top of a real steep mountain bank. And I looked up where his house was, and I considered my hip replacement from several years ago, and I said, okay, Jana, you'll be careful here. walked up. There's not enough chairs in the houses for the neighbors sitting around. So the neighbors are sitting around on rocks. And I come, and Pedro is out under this front, under this porch here. And there's a child's cot, which he's too tall for. So the chair is above the cot, but the whole thing is covered in a blanket, and the blanket is shaking. I walk up there and I say, good afternoon, Pedro. They tell me you're sick. And the blanket comes down and I see Pedro's eyes. And I said, what's going on? And he pulls up the blanket and his toe, his entire leg is red. He is shaking so hard he can hardly talk. There's already gangrene setting in. The neighbors are close around, so I'm trying to have a private conversation with his wife and Pedro. And I said, Pedro, I really need you to go to the hospital right now. If we send you to the hospital right now, we can probably cut off your toe, but save your foot, because his reason he hadn't been going was he was harvesting corn up until that time, which is entirely done by hand process. So he was going out, hobbling on his infected toe, his infected foot, because he had to get the corn in. I said, Pedro, if we get you there now, we can probably save your foot. If we wait, we're going to lose not only your toe, but your foot and your leg, and you won't be able to go out to the corn to take care of your family. So within probably 3 minutes, the guys from the neighborhood had found a pickup, had managed to haul Pedro down that terribly steep hill between about six of them. They were on the pickup, and I took on my four-wheeler back to home. Next evening at church, talked to a close neighbor of Pedro's, and I said, so how's Pedro doing? I'm thinking Pedro's in intensive care. Oh, he's back home. And I said, he's what? Yeah, they took him to the hospital. The gentleman who took him was not family. They wouldn't let him into the emergency room. So Pedro, who is a poor peasant farmer and was feeling terrible, sat down in his chair in the emergency room. And all night long, the nurses came and went, the doctors came and went. Somebody came by and drew a syringe full of pus from his foot. And by 8 o'clock the next morning, nobody had even asked him why he was there. And Pedro got up, walked out of the emergency room, hobbled two blocks down to where the bus was coming by, took Pedro back to his home. He got halfway up the incline where his house was and collapsed. We as a village started working together for Pedro. And Pedro started coming to the clinic. About a week later, I was dressing Pedro's toe and had to take his toenail off and landed down on pure bone. And we were getting nowhere. And it was getting worse. And I looked at him by that time and at his wife who was with him. I said, Pedro, I've got to get you to the hospital. So this time I wrote him a referral. He got to the hospital. That night he had his amputation. And from then on, Pedro was coming every clinic day. And we were making progress until last week. This is a very current issue. Actually, 2 weeks ago, we started not seeing Pedro. And I said, what's happening to Pedro? Because he still had a wound that was about a half an inch open. We were getting so close. And his blood sugars were getting under better control. And they said, well, he's been evicted from his land. And now the only place he could find to live is about a mile away. And he can't walk to the clinic. So we pushed mountains and did what we could. Finally got Pedro in to be seen again. And now, again, there's pus leaking from his open wound. And I'm saying, Pedro, I've got to see you every clinic day. And the 2 days before I came up, I didn't see Pedro. Now, that is a story of mountains. In your handouts, let me see if I can just do this better. In your handouts, you have the Pedro's story. And I would like for you just to go through and do an exercise. There's one handout that has a blank to the right. I want you on your own at home, just go through and see if you can think about mountains in ministry that we faced with trying to give health care to Pedro. On the next page, I'll give you some of my impressions about the mountains that we were trying to face. And you can compare them. But what I want to say is, don't tackle that mountain alone. I think if we notice anything in Scripture, what God does not want, we, as people in ministry, we go out to very difficult challenges. What God does not want is isolated workers being alone without help. If we think about that wonderful verse in 1 Corinthians 3:9, it says that we work together with God, an amazing thing for an eternal God to say to us. And then we work together with others. If you think about the examples, Jesus' disciples went out by twos. Paul's usually took one or two other people with him. If we think about creation, all through creation, this wonderful creator said, it's good, it's good, it's very good. And then he said, it's not good, one time. It was not good for humans made in his image to be alone. So, I wanted to look at Moses as a model for moving mountains. Now, we look at this guy, and he is a strong guy. I mean, he's got people following him. He's got seas opening up. He is a mountain mover. He didn't always start out that way. If he were writing memoirs today in North America, he would talk about being born in a politically oppressive regime. He'd talk about the risks of mosquito-borne diseases. He'd talk about growing up without a father. He could talk about having been raised in a pagan environment with pagan expectations, given a pagan education. How did all this experience help develop Moses into the mountain-moving man that he was? He even made some really bad choices, which turned him from a princely Moses to a redneck out in the wilderness as a fugitive. You know, 40 years of this kind of work made him kind of forget the Egyptian he learned, you know, that educated Egyptian, made him forget a lot of the Hebrew. He wasn't such a smooth speaker anymore. He spoke sheep real well. But on the day that Moses heard that call, calling him from the burning bush to lead his people out of Egypt, Moses was unprepared and overwhelmed by two things. He was overwhelmed by God's glory, and he was overwhelmed by his own inadequacy. He said, Lord, they won't listen to me. I speak terrible Hebrew and Egyptian. They won't even understand me. And finally, Lord, I don't want to. Remember, that morning when Moses was shaving, he saw this guy, the redneck, the one who can only feed sheep. That morning, God saw this guy. So what did God do to move Moses from the child who had an unfortunate background to the fugitive in the wilderness, to the guy overwhelmed by his own inadequacy, to the gentleman who could move, who could lead a nation into following God? I want to look at some of the ways that God helped him with his mountains in his ministry, and some of the ways God used to help Moses move those. The first mountain that Moses faced was the one that he said, they won't listen to me. And God responded against his mountain of inadequacy. God answered a very interesting answer. God often answers in questions. He said, what's in your hand? I can only imagine Shepherd Moses looking at his hand and going, Lord, this is a stick, you know, a dead piece of wood, a mundane tool for a mundane job. I just grabbed it, Lord. It's nothing of significance for a God-sized calling. And God looked back at him and says, really? I see it as a tool of undisclosed miracles. I see it as a physical manifestation of the power and authority of God. I see it as something that God himself, God said, I see it as something I've given you that I want you to use in obedience to me. So what's in our hand? Our family, our birth circumstances. You know, Moses really was, his background was very useful for what he was doing later on. Our interests, our education, our employment, our life experiences, both good and negative, Moses' wilderness experiences were actually very useful for leading a people through the wilderness, contacts and relationships. I kind of chuckle. I don't think the day that Moses went out to meet those shepherdesses at the well that he had awoken that morning and said, I'm going to find my wife this morning and I'm going to find my best counselor. I think he was kind of just doing the normal thing. But the Lord uses contacts, kind of random contacts and relationships for his use. This last Christmas, my family and I were together, and the five of us siblings were talking. We were the only Amish Mennonite kids in a very tight rural school in middle Kansas, and we were definitely the outsiders. And all of us admitted to having experienced a certain amount of bullying. And when I thought about this and when I was preparing this, I thought, you know, being bullied as a very timid Amish Mennonite kid was good for a number of things. One, it taught me very early on to desire a very close relationship with the Lord, because I didn't have close relationships with peers. It taught me, number two, to think my own thoughts and not rely on peer relationships. And number three, it helped me figure out what it feels like pretty quickly, at a deep sense, what it feels like to be the outsider. And so when people come in rather disenfranchised into my clinic, I have a keen relationship with them that I don't think I would have gotten otherwise. So, against the mountain of inadequacy, God's word of help is, what's in your hand? The first thing, we probably already have a lot of things given to us when we start feeling inadequacy in our ministry. The next pleas that Moses gave was, Lord, I speak a terrible Egyptian and Hebrew. They won't even understand me. I have such an accent now. You know, in Acts, it says that Moses was learned in all the wisdom of the Egyptians and was mighty in words and deeds. But he'd kind of forgotten how mighty he was. And he said, I speak sheep. But God said, who made man's mouth? And I think God was saying, I really did make you adequate for the task I've asked for you. And the next thing that God said to him is one of the most precious pictures I have in Scripture. He said, yeah, you may not be gifted, but go, and I will be with you, and I will teach you. It's a picture to me of the tutor. It's not of somebody who, I will never be prepared enough for what I meet in ministry. But God is the one who goes with me. And the night before the next assignment, he sits me down and he goes over the lesson with me and he teaches me what I need to speak. So against the mountain of ungiftedness, he says, who made man's mouth? And go, I will be with you and teach you. Moses now whines. He just says, Lord, I don't want to go. We get there sometimes. And God gives a really interesting answer. Another question. Is there not Aaron, your brother? Again, I just have to giggle when I see this in Scripture, because what we're seeing from Moses is, Lord, I don't want to go. Send someone else. And the Lord said, is there not Aaron, your brother? I want you to go. I'll send somebody with you. A gentle denial of Moses' request, but actually a great answer to his request. So against the mountain of trepidation, he says, I'm going to send somebody to help you. I already mentioned that Marietta went with me from the onset of our mission together. I knew that as a physician, I had worked for 4 years in inner city Wichita, and I knew that the medical needs of people would be screaming so loudly that I would not have the time to sit down and say, what are the other needs of your person? So from the beginning, we just decided we're going to accept that as a truth. As going to an underserved area, I was going to be overwhelmed with medical needs. I would listen as much as I could to the other parts of the persons, the social needs, the emotional needs, the spiritual needs, but she would really focus on those. So from the beginning of the clinic, she told Bible stories on the clinic front porch every day while I was inside seeing patients. They love the distraction, and she's quite the dramatic speaker. But she also does things like when we have people who are very distressed, we'll say, can you give her a massage? Or can you just listen to her? Or can you pray with her? Or could you find a book for her? Then we come to a mountain. We've gone through the mountain of ungiftedness, inadequacy, and trepidation. We come now to a mountain. Those are all sort of within us. But the mountain of crisis is something different. We go from what's in your hand to what's in your face. And what's in your face in Moses' case was ugly. He got out of his tent one morning to an ominous sound. It was a sound of whining all through the camp. They were tired of wilderness life, and manna was really boring. It says, Moses heard the people of every family wailing at the entrance of their tent because they were bored with manna, and Moses was troubled. It's not fun having thousands of people angry at you. But listen to what God did in the mountain of crisis. The Lord said, bring me 70 elders, and I will take some of the power of the Spirit that is on you and put it on them. They will share the burden of the people with you, so you do not have to carry it alone. Now, I'm twisting this last, what the Lord said to Moses, out of context, but it's in context of Scripture. Against the mountain of crisis, God says, the I Am sends people to us. And in this room, there are people that I wish I could have each of you introduced to who have been wonderful people that the I Am has sent to me. In the time of crisis, the I Am sends people to us. There have been many crises in our time in the clinic. I think of the first one, which was the time when my medical license came up against the government's requests. Before I had gone down, Arthur and I had worked extremely hard to have all my stateside high school, college, medical school, residency, state licensing, all approved by the State Department, sent to the United States Department, all approved, translated. We sent it down. This, at that point, the licensing of foreigners was processed through the medical school. And the country had just come out of a 12-year vicious civil war. So the medical school was not really, the medical school was very leftist. And they were not eager to have North Americans come in and join them. We couldn't get it done. We worked and worked and worked. We worked for 8 to 10 years trying to get my license done. One day, Marietta was at the clinic by herself, and a woman from the committee, the licensing committee in San Salvador, happened by us, and she said, so where are your licenses? And Marietta said, we've been working on them. She goes, no, that's not good enough. And she says, we're going to shut down the clinic. But by that time, the licensing had, without our knowledge, had been moved to another university, another ministry of education. And within 3 weeks, the Lord had helped Arthur help me get my licensing. It was a very tense time. People were praying for us, but the license did come through. And you can ask me many details. That's a very brief story. The next crisis that hit us was a crisis of violence. If you see the little holes in the door, I was standing, this door was open, and I was working at the clinic by myself late one afternoon. I heard something clunk on the front porch, and I thought it was probably either an animal or a patient. So I stepped out to look, and by that moment, there was a loaded automatic rifle weapon pointed at my forehead through the screen door. The Lord helped me shut the door pretty quickly, and I jumped from behind the door and to call Marietta at the house to say, hey, they are not getting anything from the clinic. They'll be down to rob you just as soon as get that house shut up. She goes, is this a bad joke or something? But the Lord saved us through the violence. But that afternoon, James and Neoma came out and installed lights for us, and that was that crisis. The third crisis, again, I just want to say, in all these crises, there have been people who have helped us through them. The earthquake left us devastated, and at exactly at the time we needed to be most helping our our fellow countrymen, we had to close down and repair the clinic. James and Neoma helped us get that clinic back running within a week. The last mountain, the mountain of overload, is a big one. The longer we're in ministry, the more those barrels pile up behind us. And we're so busy pulling, and we're so intent that we don't quite notice. And the shoulders start hurting, and the knees start creaking. And suddenly we don't realize what's going on until we kind of just fall down. This is a picture of Moses and Jethro. His age kind of changes. But when the load becomes too heavy to pull, we need people to help us pull it. For us, the load started from seeing eight people on the first day of the clinic. We were regularly seeing, I was by myself, regularly seeing 70 to 80 people a day. And at that point, I was, at the early point of the clinic, I was calling people in, listening to their history, which for country folks in El Salvador is very lengthy. And then I would do their exams in the lab. I would run to the pharmacy, count out their meds, jump back into their rooms to give the meds to them. By that time, they had thought of four other things they needed me to deal with. And so here you see me trying so hard to be patient and intent, but my other ear is cocked out to the other 60 people out there just grumbling about how long it's taking to be seen. But you know, the I Am still sends people to us. He sent it to me and local staff. From the very first day, we had a woman from the village helping us with reception work. But by the time I was seeing that many people by myself, I just said, I have to have help. And that day, Martha joined us. She started in the pharmacy. And as soon as she could do the pharmacy well, I said, okay, now I need to teach you how to do lab work. And within about 6 months after she joined us, she was doing microscopic work and doing all my lab work. From then on, as soon as we could figure out how to break a job down into small steps that people, Martha has a fifth grade Salvadoran education, which is about the same as probably a second or third grade education in the States. She's doing microscopic work. So we've discovered that if we can just break down jobs, one, even without a formal education, can do an awful lot of what we were needing to do. We would find one person, teach her, we would find Martha. She could do her job. We've moved her on to the next job, and she found someone else to take her place, and she would teach them. And that went on. So that the IM's help had, she was helping me, doing dressing changes. Other people were doing the microscopic work, teaching their own people educational lessons, doing the reception work. When we have a whole lot in our wagon, the IM sends people to us. He also sends us ministry partners. It wasn't until I crashed, my health gave way in 2008, that I was finally willing to say, I think I might need somebody else from the States. I was so committed to the idea of teaching nationals to help their own people and to giving local people jobs. Marietta had always been there, but by that time we discovered that I really needed to have her doing more of my work. So she took over the teaching of the diabetics, as well as the counseling, as well as a lot of the prayer ministry. We decided we really probably should get North Americans down to help me see patients. So we had this, Rhoda is an RN who is working as to be like a nurse practitioner, training on the job. Hannah has taken over a lot of the ordering, medicine ordering. She's my administrative assistant and takes a whole lot of barrels off my track, on my back, I'm saying. Then God has given us help from the distance. You'll know some of these people. Laverne and Rebecca have been my shepherds from the time I was in late residency or early practice. They started caring for me by meeting with me weekly, praying for me on a regular basis. Since we've been in El Salvador, they have been the people who sent medicines to us. Basically, they processed every medicine that's come to us. I can't say how much the Lord has given us through them. From a distance, just kind of random, I just want you to know just some kind of random relationships that God gives us that really help us. This is the retired professional who picked my apples, which I'm not into technology. She also bore the son who is the geek who removes the worm from my apples. He wasn't here today, but others did. We have Arthur's nephew put our entire clinical records on electronic, made for us so that our non-electronic villagers can work on the same computers that we are. I have people who have just become friends. These people provide me with a retreat. Whenever I can come down to their Ozark house, they let me stay there gratis as long as I can. I can't get there very often these days. This is the physician who robs his partners of all the samples and sent in their drug closet and sends it down to me. They're the friends who are just laugh with me. The friends who pray with me. I can call them up or email them and say, I have an urgent need. They will spend time on their knees that day. The gentleman has run a lab at a hospital, and he's the one who helps me figure out what technology might work for us. He's visited us, and he helps figure out what technology won't need air conditioning, what can deal with dust. Such a helpful person. This person is a woman who worked with me when I was in inner city Wichita. I think she worked as a volunteer maybe one half day a week. But even through 2008, every month she sent us a small check. These are my family, just the people who keep on being stable. They help process medicines. They call them pill popping parties in Kansas, but I'm a little cautious about who I say that to. I just want to acknowledge to my Uncle Paul, who has prayed for me every day since I don't know how long. There's so many people I'd love to acknowledge. But against our mountains of inadequacy, ungiftedness, trepidation, stress, and overload, we have those mountains, and we have God's mountain-moving abilities. I would like to leave you with one other mountain. And I'm going to leave it with you in the beautiful King James Version. For you who are in ministry, I will lift up mine eyes up to the hills. From whence comes my help? My help comes from the Lord, who made heaven and earth. The Lord is thy keeper. The Lord is thy shade upon thy right hand. The Lord will preserve thy going out, thy coming in, from this time forth and forever.
This recording and many others are available through Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. Order online at www.christianlearning.org or call 877-222-4769.